T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome back to Overnight America. And for this hour, I'm really looking forward to our conversation on history. It's a big topic on this show. Whenever we get an opportunity to talk about things that have happened in the past, we like to learn some of those maybe little-known facts about what perhaps sparked an American Revolution, and that's exactly what we'll be doing tonight with the author of Somerset, Philip Goodrich. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Hey, thank you for the invitation. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and you're a Missouri guy, aren't you?
Yeah, I grew up in St. Charles, not so very far from y'all. I went to high school there, but after high school, I just kind of paths diverged.
Well, you said y'all. I don't know if that's St. Charles talk. You don't hear a lot of y'alls in St. Charles, but that may be telling. So you wrote Somerset. Can you talk a little bit about your book?
Sure. I had actually come upon a court citation called Somerset versus Stewart when I was just looking through the Barnes & Noble discount closeout book section, and I'd never heard of it. So, like all good Americans, when I got home, I Googled it and got on Wiki and looked it up. And the more I read, the more I was just intrigued that this had been cited as a possible basis for the American Revolution, as a possible event that actually stirred up the South to revolt. You know, because if that's so, then that changes almost our entire concept, our entire idea of why we engaged in the American Revolution.
Well, if when you talk about this case, so say it again, it's Somerset versus, what was it?
Stewart.
Okay. So when you go in and look at that and how much significance it had to American history, yeah, a lot of people probably listening right now have no idea, again, because it was a surprise to you, but no idea still of what really went into that. So that's really what this book is about. Is it about the things that you learned while studying that?
Well, what happens is once I started looking through that, and there's an interlude section in the book that describes the case of Somerset versus Stewart. It runs for about 5 chapters. But once you look at that, you realize that the other instigating event that brought about the American Revolution was documents called the Hutchinson Letters. I'd never heard of that. Mm-hmm. Those were actually released to the press. It was leaked to the press in 1773 by none other than Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, interesting. I was wondering how he played into this.
He was doing it to stir up the people of Boston again. You know, after the Boston Massacre of 1770, things kind of quieted down in Boston. I think when they realized that lives were at stake, if they wanted to keep throwing rocks at the British and things like that, that you could really get hurt. Mm-hmm. So Franklin, by 1773, was trying to stir up Massachusetts again, and he leaked these letters that essentially had been written by a royal governor of Massachusetts back to the crown, asking them to quarter British soldiers in Boston back in 1767. So when you did the math, you realized that the reason that there were British soldiers quartered in Boston in 1770 was because of these letters. And therefore, the royal governor of Massachusetts had indirectly caused the Boston Massacre.
Interesting.
So the response from the Boston public to those letters was the Boston Tea Party.
Yeah. Isn't that something? You hear, you know these things. You know about the Boston Tea Party, because that is still,
right,
I hope, taught in school. I really hope. I don't know if that, you know, it's hard to tell what's taught in school anymore, what the actual order of importance it is when it comes to American history. I'm assuming that's still inside the record or the history books.
Well, but the Somerset versus Stuart actually precedes the Hutchinson letters,
right,
by about 9 months. Mm-hmm. And what happened in that case was that Charles Stuart was a revenue agent for the British government living in Virginia all through the 1750s and 1760s, and, of course, would have been one of the people collecting for the Stamp Act. He had purchased a slave that he named James Somerset, mm-hmm, and that slave lived with him for about 20 years as his, mm-hmm, essentially his gentleman's gentleman, if you will. And ultimately, they moved first to Boston and then finally to London. And after they got to London, James Somerset ran away. Mm-hmm. So,
this is after 20 years?
After 20 years.
Okay.
So Charles Stuart, of course, put out a price on his head to have him claimed by the bounty hunters of London, and they found him within 2 months. It was very hard for slaves to hide in London in the 18th century. Mm-hmm. And they brought him back to Charles Stuart, and Stuart said, "I don't want him. I'm angry. This guy has lived with me. I've provided for him. I've clothed him. I've given him an allowance. I've let him kind of walk through the streets of London without, you know, any kind of designation that he was a slave." He said, "I don't want him. I want you to put him on a ship and sell him in Jamaica."
Oh, wow.
But then the abolitionists of London stepped in and said, "Whoa, you can't do that."
And that's where this court battle came in?
Well, because then they filed suit in the British courts, and that's where we get the name of Somerset versus Stuart.
Wow. We will have to talk more about this. Do you mind holding on after the break?
Sure, not a problem.
Yeah. So we have an hour tonight where we're going to talk about this. So I want to talk more about that case and what happens during it, which, by the way, author Philip Goodrich, you can find this. And is today the date the book is out?
Today is the day the book drops. So if
awesome.
your audience wants to log on and go to Kindle, they can be reading it now.
Yeah. Somerset, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T-T, Somerset. You can look that up right now.
Correct.
And we're going to talk more with author Philip Goodrich coming up next on Overnight America, KMOX.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
What an interesting part of forgotten American history that I'm glad is now being documented, because I love learning about things like this, and I know a lot of our audience does as well. So there was a case, Somerset versus Stuart. The book is called Somerset, which is out today. You can go find it online if you want to get it on your Kindle or device, or maybe look it up wherever you find your books. Look up Somerset, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T-T, and author Philip Goodrich joins us this hour. Hey, thank you again for sticking around.
Sure.
I do want to talk about
it too.
Well, you put a lot of work into this. It's fun to be able to enjoy it with other people, I'm sure. But I do want to get to the Ben Franklin side of this in a little bit, because
sure,
if you were to just
absolutely
come up with like a character in a book that did all the things Ben Franklin did, you'd say that's no way possible this person could have been a real life human being, because it's unbelievable all the things Ben Franklin is a part of. It's almost just strange to think just how important he is to American history. But I wanted to go back to this case. So to kind of rewind, there was this case where out of Boston, it was a customs agent where he
yes
had a slave, but this is back in 1772, where still this is a British territory, and the customs agent had a slave for 20 years. The slave escaped, went over to England. They tried to recover, and the person who is Somerset, No, excuse me. The customs agent is Stewart or Somerset. I'm sorry, yes. I'm getting them mixed up.
The customs agent is Stewart.
Stewart tries to say, well, I want to sell the slave to another territory. Well, this is where England steps in and says, our territories and how we handle this is different than how we do it inland. So it became into a legal battle, and that's where we are now. So Somerset versus Stewart, what exactly happened there, and what were the two sides arguing?
Well, essentially, the question that was brought to the Lord Chief Justice of the Court of King's Bench was, is it legal for a slave owner to direct the sale, essentially to direct the deportation of a slave for sale in another land? Mm-hmm. And
this is a big thing because, of course, being from Boston, it's a little bit different than actually living in England or London at the time, so that adds a little extra bit to it, too.
It does, and at the same time, Stewart was asserting his right of ownership of Somerset to do whatever he wanted with him. Mm-hmm. And the London courts were saying, not so fast. Ultimately, it becomes the case of the century in a way, because we have five attorneys working on Somerset's side and two attorneys working on Stewart's side. And the Lord Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, essentially that equivalent in London, hearing the case with two other judges at his side, and he drags this out for a full 8 months before he makes a final decision, which was unusual in the 18th century. You know, they had cases that would be decided in 15 minutes.
So what happens to Somerset at a time like this, because in today's modern history, we think about there's bail or maybe they're being held for a decision or something. What happens to Somerset during this time?
He's been bailed out, and he is actually living under the protectorship of one of the abolitionists of London, Anglican named Granville Sharp. And Granville Sharp has been working on trying to find a case where he could force the manumission of a slave. He'd been working on this for 4 years behind the scenes with this Chief Justice because they were both trying to find a case where they could free an American slave. Mm-hmm. And they felt that they finally had it here. And three different times the judge begs Stewart and the planters of the West Indies to just deal with this on your own and let this man go, because you're not going to like this decision if you take this to a decision. And they dug their heels in and said, no, we want a decision from the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And Mansfield finally said, all right, the decision is this man goes free.
Wow. And they basically didn't want to set a precedent. The judge or the court didn't want to at that point. Yeah, so
exactly.
They were forced to, in a way. So it gets to that point. What did that mean, socially speaking, in London? Did it seem like a victory like that led the way to how slavery was looked at as the society?
Initially, many people that were slave owners in London and its environs did go ahead and immediately release their slaves. They thought that's what it meant, and they were sort of interpreting it on their own. The Lord Chief Justice, after the fact, said, no, this was just for this one slave, and kind of walked back his decision for the ensuing 10 years. But the cat was already out of the bag. The bottom line, though, was that Benjamin Franklin, of course, was living in London at this time, and he seized onto this case and immediately sent letters out to certain plantation owners in Virginia, such as George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, the entire Lee family, the entire Randolph family, and said, listen, if you guys stay in the empire, you're going to lose your slaves. And all of a sudden, we've got a committee of correspondence being formed in Virginia for the first time in the winter of 1772 and 1773 after they get these letters from Franklin. And now they're saying, we're really anxious to revolt from the British government. Virginia had never been anxious to revolt from the British government. They had a good relationship with the British government. They were mostly Tories. They were, you know, had a very brisk and wealthy trade going with Great Britain. And now all of a sudden, they want out of the empire.
You know, what's interesting about this is because when we learn about this in school, a lot of it has to do with the taxation and the relationship between the two wanting to be independent, self-governing. And I wonder what you're talking about here. What do you think, if you were to put a percentage on the motivation to separate from England, would this be a significant percentage, you believe? Or do you think this is just one of the contributing factors that it's hard to tell how much of this had a factor?
For the colonies from Maryland on south, this was probably the primary factor. Mm. For the colonies from Pennsylvania on north, the Hutchinson letters and the reaction to the Boston Boston Tea Party was the primary factor.
Right.
So,
and that's where these Hutchinson letters come into play.
I'm sorry?
And that's these Hutchinson letters. This is where you get a lot of this information.
Yes. Well, the Hutchinson letters, like I said, that triggered the Boston Tea Party, because the assumption by the Sons of Liberty in Boston was that the Hutchinson letters were the reason that the British were present at the Boston Massacre and were there and started shooting people. So if that's true, then they were reacting against the British government, because they were still quartering soldiers there, and they wanted mm-hmm. them out.
Right.
But ultimately, then, it's not so much the Boston Massacre. I'm sorry, here we go, the Boston Tea Party. It's the mm-hmm. reaction to the Boston Tea Party. And, mm-hmm. again, that's something that the American public needs to keep in mind. What was the reaction to the Boston Tea Party? And the reaction to the Boston Tea Party was the Intolerable Acts.
Hmm. I want to. Oh,
go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. We got a little bit of a weird lag delay. I'm sorry.
It's okay. They were the acts from the British government that essentially closed the harbor of Boston and shut down all their commerce mm-hmm. and said that they were not going to open their commerce until all the tea had been paid for. Mm-hmm. And essentially, they started starving out Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. You look at these chain reactions of things that went down. So I want to go back to Ben Franklin mm-hmm. living in London at this time and writing these letters. Do we have those letters, those documents? Have they been preserved, or how did you find out about those letters to begin with?
We do not. All we know is that Benjamin Franklin was using some communication method to keep stirring up the plantation owners, the slaveholders of the American South.
Mm.
And the mechanism, you know, Franklin was commonly corresponding with burn this, destroy this, you know, for your eyes only, and much of his correspondence of that time frame is gone.
Mm. Mission Impossible style, or what's the go-go gadget arm guy? So this message will self-destruct as soon as you toss it to the side. You know what?
But the recipients actually had to destroy it in the 18th century.
Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about Ben Franklin. And do you
sure.
mind doing that after the break?
Absolutely. Don't mind at all.
So this is what I was going to ask you, maybe, and to our listeners. I'm curious, because Ben Franklin was such a interesting guy, such a smart guy, too. I wanted to ask our guest, author Philip Goodrich, if maybe he thinks that this was a manipulation tactic. So trying to break away, trying to be its own country, Ben Franklin, a big part of drafting the documents and being there as part of American history. I'm wondering if this was something that was a tool, a manipulation tool, in order to get us a little bit closer to that. And that's what I want to talk to Philip Goodrich about coming up next. You can look his book up now. It's called Somerset, Somerset. And it's out today electronically. You can get it right now if you wanted to. What a real fascinating part of American history. I'm guessing you had no idea any of this happened. So we're going to learn a little bit more coming up next on Overnight America KMOX.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
And Overnight America continues. And I got to say, I'm learning an awful lot here, and I am sure you are as well. The book is called Somerset, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T-T, or Why and How Benjamin Franklin Orchestrated the American Revolution. And joining us is the author, Philip Goodrich. You grew up in St. Charles, and here we are talking on KMOX tonight. Again, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah, so my producer Mike, texted me a question. He wanted to know if the title of the book was inspired by Dr. Strangelove, because it's got the, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. So is there any inspiration there?
There's probably a tie one way or another, yes.
I get that. Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit about Benjamin Franklin, because before we got into
Absolutely.
The break, you talked about some of the letters that he wrote and to some of the leaders back here in the United States, the Washingtons, the Madisons, the Jeffersons of the world. And I'm wondering, do you think Benjamin Franklin, he was a smart guy, very wise, he knew how to manipulate things. Do you think he was directly or maybe indirectly trying to spark the American Revolution?
He was directly. The first part, the first half of the book goes into the whole why of why would Benjamin Franklin do this? Benjamin Franklin absolutely loved Philadelphia. He wasn't from Philadelphia, he was from Boston. But Philadelphia was his adopted home. They were the ones that had taken him in when he was essentially a fugitive apprentice. He wanted Pennsylvania to succeed. He wanted Philadelphia to succeed. They were both being threatened during King George's War by the French and by the indigenous people all around them. And he asked the Penn family, William Penn's children, who were now adults and were the proprietors of Pennsylvania, to please provide defense, because otherwise they were going to get killed. And the Penn family pretty much told Franklin to forget it and to quit worrying about it and grow up. Franklin was furious over this. Franklin took it upon himself to raise a militia to defend Pennsylvania. And the Penn family responded by wanting to charge him for treason against the Penn family and the Crown for raising a militia in Pennsylvania. So he was even more furious after that and traveled to London to try to convince Parliament and the Crown to take Pennsylvania away from the Penn family. And they all said, we love the Penn family. They give us money. They're kind to us. They, you know, they behave well in London. We're not going to take this land away from them. You know, and they pretty much told Franklin to go home as well. And as you've indicated, Franklin, he was a genius. He was a political master. He knew everything he was doing, and all authorities agree that there was only one man that Benjamin Franklin ever hated in his entire life, and that man was Thomas Penn. And so he would do anything to get Pennsylvania away from the Penn family. Unfortunately, his assistants and advisors in London told him, there's no way you can pull Pennsylvania out of the empire. You know, there's no precedent for taking a single colony and making them into a separate entity. They said, if you're going to pull Pennsylvania out of this, you're going to have to take 12 colonies out with you.
So he said, challenge accepted.
He said, challenge accepted. And so it was like, okay, I've got six colonies north of me and six colonies south of me. How do I get them into this? The southern colonies, I can get into it if I can get one slave set free. The northern colonies, I can get into this if I can get them angry over the British soldiers again. His best friend in London is a man named Thomas Pownall, who at one time was governor of Massachusetts, lieutenant governor of New Jersey, governor of South Carolina, and had turned down being governor of Pennsylvania. He was one of the most preeminent people in the United States before they were the United States, and he is totally forgotten by history.
Wow.
But he's the one that stole the Hutchinson letters and handed them to Franklin to leak to the press.
And Franklin, part of the press, too. I mean, he was also printing and doing all of this.
Oh, Franklin had great contacts both in London and in Boston. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Do you know what Franklin's personal views on slavery were? Do we know what he thought about it?
It's complicated. Franklin himself was a slave owner. He owned between four and six slaves during his life. Franklin was a printer by trade. If you went to the colonies in 1750, as far north as Boston, in every print shop, you would see a black African slave that was actually pumping the presses. You know, if you had a circulation of 5,000 newspapers, that meant 5,000 pumps of the press every day. That was hard work. And so Franklin was a slave owner. But at the same time, he needed financial help for his revolution, and the only people that were in a position to help him financially were, of all people, the London Quakers. The London Quakers were, every last one of them was a millionaire. Every one of them. They were probably the wealthiest people outside of the nobility in London at the time. And Franklin, being from Pennsylvania, knew all the Quakers of Pennsylvania and had contact with the London Quakers. So he solicits financial help from them, and of course the London Quakers were the abolitionists. And so they told Franklin, okay, listen, we are going to help you with this, but you are going to help us with abolition once we get your colonies free.
Interesting.
So at the very end of Franklin's life, suddenly when he gets back to the American colonies, he becomes a staunch abolitionist. Simply to fulfill his promise to the London abolitionists.
Isn't that something? So he uses the, hey, the South, this is what could happen if you don't get on board. And then ultimately, once the wheels get in motion, he becomes, frankly, basically looks at what he said on the South and goes in the complete opposite direction when it comes to his own personal life.
Sure. And even the American colonies, the northern colonies were actually passing laws abolishing slavery during the American Revolution, while the southern colonies were fighting to preserve it.
Isn't that something?
And the only person that can hold all this together is Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah. What a interesting part of history that no one knows about. I mean, honestly, do they teach this in any class? I don't know anyone that
no
I've
one knows
ever
this
spoke
story.
To.
No one knows this story, and 250 years later, it's high time the American public knew this story.
So what do you think the takeaway of this story should be, the grand conclusion and the things that stand out the most to you?
Well, there are several. First of all, I think that it's important that people understand the great contribution that Benjamin Franklin made in terms of freedom for America. At the same time, I think it's important that people now realize that indeed we did have institutional slavery for 240 years from 1619 until the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And institutional slavery was the law of the land. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a staggering number when you think about it. 240 years of sanctioned slavery in the United States. So, you know, these are serious issues that require some serious contemplation. I'm gonna do some self-advertising here, but I just had an editorial drop in Time magazine 2 days ago, and it's online on the June 22nd issue of Time magazine about this very issue, about how many wars did we actually fight to preserve slavery.
In Time magazine.
We've actually fought at least two, at least the American Revolution and the Civil War were fought to preserve slavery.
Yeah, and you don't think of the Revolution as being directly connected that way, because this part is just forgotten. And the other part of it is that we're doing ourselves a disservice by not learning these things, to not learn the history of America, because ultimately it's better for us to be knowledgeable of our past.
We absolutely need to know this. That's why we need to know this story.
It's an interesting story. Do we know what happened to Somerset after that case?
We only know for about 2 months, and then he's lost to history, and he's lost throughout the rest of his life. Presumably, he stayed in London. There was a relatively large black community, and there would have been no reason for him to leave after that. And, in fact, he probably would have feared if he'd left, he might have been sold back into slavery.
Wow,
so he very likely lived out his life in London, but we lose track of him after August. He'd been freed 2 months previously, and by August of 1772, he's gone.
What about Stuart? Do we know what happened to that customs agent?
Stuart ended up living out his life in London. He wasn't vilified by anybody. He lived a relatively comfortable life. He had been one of the biggest tax collectors in the colonies and was reasonably comfortable, but lived out his life and died shortly after the American Revolution.
You know, I'm wondering, in the history of Ben Franklin, so you talk about all of the moving parts and how he was directly moving America towards revolution. He kind of used that case in order to get the South on board, but later in his life became an abolitionist. I'm wondering if he ever took that on in order to try to make that a bigger issue in America, as opposed to just the northern states taking it on, if he ever tried to get the South on board as well.
He tried to get everybody on board, but he was literally at the end of his life. You know, the smoke really hadn't cleared as far as the American Revolution until 1783. He comes back to the United States in 1787 against his own better judgment. He gets drafted to help write the Constitution. People want to make him the first president, and he says, "No, George Washington is your president. I can't do this." But the very last thing he ever writes is an op-ed in the press attacking American slavery.
So
and it was 2 months
before
he died, and but it was his last statement in the American press was just an outright attack on slavery.
Wow. If he would have lived longer, imagine how American history could have changed at that moment, honestly.
Because the other guy that was in his corner was Thomas Paine. And Thomas Paine was a staunch abolitionist, and he was angry that right after the American Revolution, I think all the Quakers thought, okay, now they're going to sit down and they're going to figure out how to free all the slaves. And in our own Constitution, it's there. It says by 1808, we will have worked this all out. It's right there in the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
Well, how did that work out?
Not exactly. But it's you think about how history could have been different, and if anyone could have got it done, it would have been Ben Franklin. And
absolutely.
Just what an interesting part of history. Do you mind holding on one more segment?
I don't mind at all.
And Philip Goodrich is joining us, author of Somerset, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T-T. I'm going to talk to him just for a couple more minutes, and I got to say, this is just an amazing part of American history that I'm guessing you, as the listener here right now, had no idea all of this happened. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
And Overnight America continues. One more time, I wanted to introduce our guest, Philip Goodrich. And by the way, if people wanted to look you up online, look your book up, where can they find it?
I can be found at PhilGoodrichAuthor, all lowercase, .com. And I'm on Facebook at PhilGoodrichAuthor, three words.
Cool.
And then my other page is on Amazon. Yeah,
and people can look up your book, Somerset, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T-T, Somerset. And I'm wondering, for the listener, the reader, the one that would pick this up, what are you hoping they take away from Somerset?
I think they're going to get a whole new appreciation for Benjamin Franklin, for his brilliance, for the fact that he wasn't just this semi-awake grandfather going to a bunch of meetings during the Declaration of Independence and during the Constitution. There were five great documents of the American Revolutionary period. There is one man on the entire planet that signed all five of them, and that man's name is Benjamin Franklin. I can't overstate, just as you've indicated, I cannot overstate the impact that this man made in the formation of our country.
Yeah, you know that movie in the 90s, Forrest Gump? People watch that and they say, wow, wouldn't that be amazing if a person like that actually existed and was able to do all of these things interweaving into American history? And we can go back and say, yeah, well, there was a guy by the name of Benjamin Franklin that probably did that times 10. It's just so remarkable that even that type of human being could have existed on this planet and was able to accomplish everything he accomplished.
Yes, there is not one key event of the revolution that does not have Franklin's hand on it.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy. I heard some things about him once that when they were drafting the Constitution, he wanted to put a joke into it, and they had to, like, restrain him from doing that, which he had a sense of humor, too.
I wouldn't put that past him for a moment.
I like all of this. So you ever make it back to Missouri?
Oh, well, I'm living on the Kansas City side now. I'm over
great.
In Platte City, just down the road. We're the Me Too little brother of St. Louis.
I see. So you're not too far away. And, yes, not that long. Who knows? Maybe before you know it, we'll have a giant tube that speeds us between the two cities, and it'll make it easy
that would
to
be
get
sweet.
Between it. All right, so you wrote an article for Time. And by the way, if you go to Time Magazine's website and do a quick search for your name, I'm sure the article will come up. Philip Goodrich. I got to say, I really enjoyed our time together, and this was awesome, and I really hope that your book catches on. I'm sure it will, and I love American history. You've done a great job documenting it here.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for the time.
So go and look this book up, Somerset, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T-T, by author Philip Goodrich. He spent the entire hour with us talking about it, and raise your hand if you learned something new about American history. Okay, let's count the hands. Oh, look at that. Everyone has their hand up. And what I think is another important thing to point out is that if you're in a school, high school, college, whatever it may be, I think you really need to examine the different things that are being taught in school. So what are those things in the history books that you're giving a lot of attention to? And moments like this, why isn't a moment like this getting the attention it deserves? Because it is a very interesting part of American history, even if it's just for a day of lecture or a part of a day. He joined us, by the way, in the TDK Technologies guest line. There's so many great moments in American history that we just don't give enough credit or attention to. It's no wonder why no one has an appreciation for American history. So coming up after the break, we're going to talk to our friend Dave Scott. He's with the podcast Spaced Out Radio and also the radio show. He's been syndicating the show and keeping busy with it. There's a new briefing that came out, and we're going to talk to him about that coming up on Overnight America KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.